just when he thought it was safe. Those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alert.
Our quote of the day, and again, you know, this is, it's a little old since we've taken a couple of days off, but I guess it shows the mindset of just how far the Republican Party has gone off the deep end. Paul Labrador, the Idaho Republican, said, quote, "Nobody dies because they don't have access to health care." And you go, really? Can someone say that with a straight face in this country? Honestly, truthfully, can you? And I guess, you know, again, it's that disconnect between reality and the world that these folks live in. And I got to tell you, at some point, the Republican Party needs to find, well, they need to find a dose of sanity in here to talk about what's been going on the last couple of days and where we need to be going, as just the all-on assault seems to have taken over our good friend Propane Jane. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So we take a little bit of time off, and Washington loses its mind, and it's just kind of wow. I mean, that's the only word I can come up with.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, it's never ending, and this is why I call him instability in chief, because it is always unstable. Our government is in a constant state of chaos, because, you know, as they like to call him, the CEO president, is unstable, and he's in a crisis, and so everything that he's supposed to be overseeing is going to be a crisis as well.
Right, but here's the thing that gets me is you were seeing all of these news reports that, you know, now, you know, does Donald have Alzheimer's? You know, is he losing his mind? Are the Republicans finally waking up? And I go, but here's the thing. We've been talking about this for months now. This is not new, or this is not news at this point. This is reality.
This is reality, and you know, as we talked about again months ago, that it really is a slow moving train wreck in progress. I mean, of course, yes, they are. There's a steady daily stream of incompetence and corruption, and it feels like they're throwing things in so many directions, and that it is moving fast. But it is a train wreck, and it is a disaster, and it's just going on and on and on and on. And it just makes you wonder, like, are we ever going to get to the point where there's an intervention that actually just stops the train on the track?
Finally. Yeah, that's what 2018 hopefully is going to be. But until then, I mean, we see all of these distractions, and you're right, we're just inundated with all of this stimulus. How much of it do you think, though, could be by design? Because, look, I'm looking at all of this legislation and all these executive orders and all of the machinery of government being pushed in absolutely the wrong direction. I mean, as I talked about at the beginning, we're making the war on drugs great again. We're making voter suppression great again. You know, there's all of these things that are happening that our media is not focused on because we're watching the shiny thing.
Right. There are multiple shiny things, and ultimately it's a disrupt and destroy mission, and it's happening on two fronts. It's happening domestically in terms of the Republican Party and this long-standing obsession they've had with, you know, making government so small that you can drown it in a bathtub. And now having this absolute power and three branches of government, them just trying to throw everything they can onto the plate so that they can, you know, eat till they're full and happy. So that's one side of it. And then the other side of it is the outside disrupt and destroy mission that's happening from foreign leaders and our adversaries, in particular Russia. And yes, how much of this chaos, if you think about them sort of pulling the strings of our government and our democracy from abroad, you know, what would be the motive, right? I mean, the motive is that America has thus far been a superpower, and Russia wants to, you know, take over, basically. And so it would behoove them to interfere with our election. It would behoove them to install a man and a party with absolute power that, even if they don't necessarily care what happens to our domestic policy, they care that that as a country we are weakened. And so you have to wonder why the Republican Party seems so insistent on sharing this sentiment of down with America, when at the same time they're saying that they're making America great.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing to me. But here's the thing: you go back to that divide and conquer. And right now, I would argue that we're at a time in history where, you know, maybe the Civil War was the last time we were this divided. Because you see these white supremacists marching around saying, you know, Russia's our friend, and you know, it's kind of it's a crazy world that we're in right now.
Yeah, and I think you know, in terms of Putin and in terms of these you know, so-called patriots or self-described patriots, who are suddenly finding themselves aligned with Russia. When you think about it from a standpoint of, you know, like an Aryan nation or a tribalism aspect, in that sense, it feels good to them because they are aligning against the ascendancy of certain demographics. You know, when you look at the xenophobic sentiment and the isolationist sentiment, all of this vilification of immigrants and, you know, refusing to allow refugees over, they very much are identifying with the sameness of you know, melanin content. And I think even more so politically, when you put it under the auspices of the Republican Party. I mean, years ago, during Obama's presidency, Fox News and the right-wing echo chamber, in a lot of ways, whenever there were these conflicts between Putin and President Obama, they took Putin's side. And they were very much talking about, you know, that President Obama's in mom jeans and Putin is so strong and he's, you know, riding, you know, with
riding
no
the horse with no shirt.
Exactly, right? And so, you know, the embodiment of, you know, for lack of a better terminology, this white man that they wanted to see as superior, it didn't necessarily matter that person was a foreign adversary. It just, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. They became friends with that ideology because it was against Obama and they were against Obama as well. And so now it puts them in a position where you have, you know, so many members of even the Republican leadership in so many ways that have these precarious ties to Russia and have been getting money from Russia. How many of these Republican campaigns benefited from outside money? And so ultimately, you know, I think that they've sort of sold their souls in that aspect.
No, that's exactly what I was going to bring up. I mean, you look at the fact that our media has been, you know, there's a lot of Russian money going into a whole bunch, both on the right and the left. There's been a ton of Russian money that's just, again, it comes back to the money and this belief that money is speech and, you know, speech and all of that. At some point, don't we have to start investigating where this money comes from? And there have been some reports here lately that, you know, you look at, you know, Trump probably having ties with the Russian mob and the money influence there. There's so much to be investigated. I can't believe that the Republicans as a whole, I see a couple saying that we need an independent special prosecutor to really get to the bottom of this, or it never goes away.
Right. I mean, you know, and I think the thing that's so difficult about it, and for a lot of people, you know, people just keep asking, well, what is the Republican Party doing? Why don't they care? Why aren't they more enthusiastic about investigating this? And I think the issue is that the power aspect is, you know, are they going to do something that removes them from power? The likelihood of that is very low. And so all of this, like, criminality that we see happening and them sort of just looking the other way, you know, Trump is actively obstructing justice. And they are still managing to sort of, you know, wiggle themselves out of holding him accountable. You know, they're still saying they don't need a special prosecutor. And so in a lot of ways, they are enabling the criminality, because for them, the incentive is that they get to remain in power and they get to forward this very fascist agenda.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because, you know, there, and again, I guess this is another, you know, problem with Trump and the administration is they can't seem to get their story straight. And, you know, I go back,
right,
you know, my
right.
grandfather always said, you know, they'd lie when the truth would be better. And I think
exactly.
it's just their reflex is to lie, ask the question and you make something up. But, you know, as these stories keep coming out, was it that, you know, Comey asked for more money? Was it because of the Russian investigation? Was it because of the testimony? Go down the list of what ifs. I think it was more along the lines of Comey would not pledge loyalty to Trump, and that sent him into a rage. And it's that simple. All the other stuff, that didn't matter. It's that loyalty thing, which, again, I got to think is, you know, there's something there.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we are not looking at an upstanding government administration right now. We are. This is more so along the lines with like The Godfather in any sort of like mafia movie that you've ever watched.
So you broke my heart, Fredo. You broke my heart.
Right. I mean, you know, there's a gangster code that we're working under right now, even though a lot of people don't want to admit to that. But the code is not the Constitution. The code that Trump is going by is, are you loyal to me? And yes, I may be doing some things that aren't necessarily above board, but that's okay, because as long as we stick together, we're all going to make it out of this. And so, you know, as the timeline goes, I was just reading an article entitled Dead Man Lying, and it was in Salon. And, you know, he talks about, he kind of compares the Watergate scandal to what's going on now, and how the more revelations that come out, the more evidence that comes out of wrongdoing, that the lies become ever more unbelievable, actually, and even more preposterous as time goes on. And that each round of firings and throwing people under the bus, it's accelerating in concert with the revelations themselves. And so even though he's saying things that are just wildly false and really taking a lot of pride in the sociopathy of the gangster code of, you know, demanding loyalty from Comey. And he flat out said, you know, I knew I was going to fire him. He was showboating. He was grandstanding. And he's being very transparent, I think, in a lot of ways in terms of it, you know, his motive in firing Comey just being that this was a guy that was going to rat him out and that he wasn't able to get him at this dinner to agree to shut down the Russia investigation. And so even though it looks really bad, I think that this is the best he can do in terms of explaining himself and his actions.
So are we expecting Comey to be sleeping with the fishes or waking up with a horse head anytime soon?
You know, I
because, you know, look, I listened to the other part of it is, you know, Trump said, well, Comey better hope there are no tapes. And you go, wait a second. Are you just throwing this out there on purpose just to you know, to make a storm of you know what? And I got to think that on a certain level, there's an evil genius to this.
Yeah, it's a scare tactic. It's a means to say, you know, you don't know what I have on you. And yes, you know, with Comey in particular, I think that he is in a precarious position because of, you know, the kind of scandal that is surrounding the revelations that he made about this, you know, Hillary's emails during the campaign and right before the election. And so in some ways, I think also in terms of Trump thinking that firing Comey was going to be like a very popular decision amongst Democrats, that there was an idea in his mind that Comey was dirty too, and that he could somehow put him between a rock and a hard place, and kind of blackmail him out of revealing what's going on in terms of the investigation. And you know, Comey seems, at least at this point, to be insistent upon wanting to testify publicly. And, you know, now that there are more of these leaks coming out internally from the FBI, you know, it seems like Comey got to a point where he was thinking, man, this guy is really unstable as well.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. I blame Comey for all of this.
Of course.
And there's a point at me where I go, you know what? He deserved to get fired, not for, you know, the loyalty or anything, but he deserved to get fired from the beginning. But all of this he deserves because he created this monster by that nonsense a couple of days before the election.
Absolutely. And I think that there is sort of a redemption in some ways that he is seeking in terms of being transparent now and admitting, you know, I mean, obviously, even though he's saying it makes me nauseous to think that I had this impact on the election. And yes, he is certainly minimizing the role that he played. I think he, you know, wants to disavow the possibility that it all hinged on him. But I also think that's kind of the poetic justice of this whole situation, is that the man who ultimately put Trump there, in a lot of ways is possibly going to be responsible for taking him down the way that Trump has fired him so abruptly and without doing it in a way that kind of passes the smell test.
Right.
I think had he done it in an organized, stepwise fashion and actually brought in players that have some credibility. I mean, you know, him getting the okay from Sessions, that doesn't really help anything because Sessions, you know, he's got blood on his hands too.
Yeah, he's got Russia on his hands as well. But you're
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they all seem to have the Russian money or the Russian stink on them one way or another.
Yeah. And so I do think that, you know, as I called it a couple of months ago, it's like a corruption buffet. And there is so much corruption that you almost can't address each thing sufficiently, because there's so much going on. And I do think that Trump in a lot of ways, feels that disruption is going to in the end get him out of it because you know who can keep it straight.
Yeah, and who can keep up? Because look, you know, I've been following this soap opera, and look, no team of daytime soap writers could ever imagine what's been going on with all of this. But I think at some point, don't we just burn out? And I think part of the hope is that we burn out and just say, there's nothing we can do, throw up our hands and turn away from it.
Yeah, you know, the thing is that even though we may want to burn out, Trump is not burning out. His pathology is not burning out. And so because the crisis is ongoing and because he himself is decompensating under the stress and under the suspicion, you know, again, we're hearing about him, you know, in people's conversations potentially in the White House and becoming just so paranoid about who is around him and who is leaking information. And so each day, you know, he is going to be so erratic that we aren't going to be able to become apathetic because, you know, the outrages just continue.
Right.
And that is actually, you know, how he's, you know, kind of just in quicksand. And he himself is going to continue to implicate himself and the rest of his administration. And, you know, in that way, we're kind of lucky that he's the telltale tweeter.
Oh, yeah, because at least, you know, the one thing you could say is he's not afraid to say things in public and throw the red meat out there. But here's the thing that bothers me is, you know, I look at this burnout and I look at this and I hope you're right. I hope we're able to keep up because his insatiable appetite for attention – it doesn't go away, but I think at some point we just kind of look during the Obama administration, there were days where I didn't, I didn't even think about the president. Today, there isn't a day that goes by.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I also think that for those representatives in Congress, this is also their job, right? I mean, for us, we have other jobs, but their job is to listen to their constituents. You know, these town halls are not going to stop. People are going to continue to call their representatives. They're going to continue to be outraged about the policy that's flowing through Congress because our actual lives depend on this and our livelihoods depend on this. You know, we're talking about the social safety net. We're talking about the integrity of our American institutions. And so, you know, I think the apathy that got us to this point in a lot of ways was due to the fact that things were so stable. And you could trust that, you know, you could go to bed at night and President Obama wasn't in the middle of the night, waging World War III on his Twitter account. And so it was easier at that time, I think, to kind of disengage. But right now, the stakes really just are so high that unfortunately we're all tuned in. But at the same time, I think that us being tuned in is what is eventually going to get Congress to wake up and finally do something. Even the reluctant Republicans, they are hearing from their constituents, and there is going to be a day of reckoning. It's just a question of how long does it take for us to get there.
Yeah. So last line of questioning I've got for you then, because everybody I talk to right now, active, engaged, you know, ready to fight, ready to, to bring to bear. What's the advice to help them maintain? Because look, we all burn out at a certain point. We all, need a break at some point. What's your professional opinion on what people should do?
I would say as much as you can, connect with the good of humanity. Because so much of this that's making it exhausting is the sheer just level of negativity and pathology and like evil energy that's flowing around us. And so as much as you can, get out and see the good of humanity, see the good that people are doing in your community, because there's good happening all around you, actually. I work in a hospital, obviously. I work in a clinic. I work in a setting where people are being helped, and just to see the smiles on people's faces, that kind of rejuvenates me after, going on the internet and seeing Instability in Chief having another meltdown. So I would just say as much as you can, stick to the golden rule, try to be good to others so that good will come back to you.
Or at least the silver rule, and do at least not the ugly stuff that you'd want people not to do to you, kind of.
Absolutely. And have a voice. I mean, speak up. You know, the problem, I think, is that we feel disempowered. And a lot of this, I think, we have to understand that as people, as the society, we have the power. We actually do have the power to make things change, but we have to be loud and we have to be forceful, and we just can't give up.
There you go. Great advice. Jane, I appreciate the time.
All right. Absolutely. Have a great week.
You as well. Thanks so much, Propane Jane. Look, that's the advice. Stay active, stay engaged, but stay connected to your fellow human beings. Good stuff. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.